We were looking for a wanted subject. I hear something on the radio, and I'm not even sure what it was, but I knew they asked for a dog, so I'm like, all right, I gotta go. So I just start driving. And then I start to realize that it was an escaped prisoner. And we start tracking. So we're tracking through the apartment complex. We actually come out to the backside of Publix, and now it's just that whole wooded area where all those swamps are. So I do the point-to-point. Ronan goes into the woods, and now me and Mike are in the swamp. The water's probably like mid-thigh. Ronan's not even tracking. He's just swimming. As we get probably mid into the swamp, we can't see anything. There's nobody around. But all of a sudden, out of nowhere, Ronan just dives under the water.
This is 56, a Pinellas County Sheriff's Office podcast. I'm Ricky Butler with Laura Sullivan and Ashley Cooley. This episode, we're going back to the dogs. We've got Corporal Justin Feinberg with us from the K-9 unit. This is a guy that grew up in Boston.
Yes, sir.
In the Northeast there, and came down here, wanted to be a cop, got picked up by the sheriff's office, and there's a lot of fun stuff in between that we want to talk about. But first, Ashley has a question.
Ooh.
Your name is a verb. What does it mean to Laura something, Ricky something, Justin something?
You mean like my actual name is
yes.
a verb? Like my last name?
Either. It's just really your name being a verb. Be like, oh man, you Justin that up.
Oh.
Whatever.
Wow.
Oh.
Yeah.
Laura something is to be looking over your shoulder at the body cam that you all think is hilarious and me finding some really serious thing like, no, don't you understand what's going to happen to that animal after that camera cuts off?
That is 100%
fair. Yeah.
I feel like it should be perfection, but it's not because I say a lot of crazy stuff and I'm always falling down. So if you were to Justin that means you probably messed it up.
So like anti
yeah, just don't do what Justin does.
Okay. Wow. There's so many ways I go with this, but I think to counter the Justin, if you Ricky something, it's a total disaster, but it looks great and you'll
Ooh,
never know.
That's Ooh. Good. As long as you look mm-hmm. good while you mess up, that's all that matters.
Exactly.
That's true. Yeah.
And
that's
most
true.
People don't know. We say it all the time. We're talking mm-hmm. about things that go wrong because they do go wrong. People don't know what they don't know.
Yeah. No, that's why when I fall down, at least like I do a nice Hondo roll.
Right. Like so you meant to do it.
It looks I meant to do that.
Yeah.
Especially when the eagle catches it on video, then it's really good.
So there's that. And then Laura's looking over the shoulder going, man, I think I don't know.
He definitely dislocated that.
Yeah, that doesn't look good.
And do you know about the environmental impact of falling into that 6-foot pit yeah. that you just fell into?
Yeah.
It's hard to recover from.
Mine's not as exciting, I think, to Ashley something is just to overthink the hell out of it.
Ooh.
Until it's
yeah, we need to change
all kind of messed up. But yeah. I have been told actually, what is Ashley something is to show up in your vehicle on fumes.
Ooh,
okay,
yeah. I was like, oh, okay.
I feel like that could apply probably to a lot of people in your demographic.
Yeah, I guess. I wait until it's blinking at me. It tells me it's yeah. time. That's what I do.
That was a good one.
Yeah.
That was a really good one. I like that. She's on a roll. I mean,
yeah.
they've all been good. Sometimes she really stumps us, but other times it's like, that was fun. That was good.
You think we'll start using those in the office, though?
Yeah, why not?
You really Ricky'd up that flowchart. Good job.
Yeah. Yeah. That's an Aaron thing, too. That's a whole different verb. All right. Justin Feinberg.
Yes.
Grew up a mass hole.
I did. And we are for sure.
So
that saying is 100% legitimate.
So you were... You were a sports guy growing up.
I was.
All the sports. Why? Tell us about that.
I don't know. I mean, it's just I love the competition aspect of everything. I think I've always been that way. I've always been drawn to pushing myself to the limit in that sense. And competition is great. And when you're good at something, I mean, it feels good. I mean,
right.
at the end of the day. So being able to do a sport and grow up doing something like that, and it helps you. I mean, it conditions you. So many things. I mean, even having coaches, I mean, they're almost like second fathers in that sense. Mm-hmm. I mean, you're learning a lot from people. So mm-hmm. it was a good attribute for growing up and doing that. So, yeah, I loved sports growing up.
And you were always like in the star position, right?
I was. It's not just, you know, yeah.
So you were the quarterback and you were the...
I was.
I don't know if sports
I
things.
I was. I was the quarterback when I played football. I was mm-hmm. a pitcher when I played baseball. I was a point guard when I played basketball. So
you're like the guy.
I was. Yeah. I was the guy. Now I'm just the guy.
Just a guy?
Yeah, just a guy.
A guy.
I might argue with that, but...
So, like you mentioned, you referenced a few sports. So, you literally played all the sports. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Basketball, baseball, football.
Pretty much all year long, I was always doing something.
Doing sports.
Yeah.
Did you play all the way through high school then? Like,
yes.
All the way? No college or anything?
No.
Just gave it up then? You're like,
I didn't really like school, so college wasn't for me.
Yeah.
Yeah. At that point, I was just done.
Which is totally fine for you youngsters listening out there. If you don't like school, it's fine. You don't have to go to college.
Yeah, just do something with yourself.
Exactly. So you had some family members that were in law enforcement.
Yeah,
I did. You kind of knew from an early age you just wanted to do something that helped people. Tell us about that.
Yeah, so, I mean, my uncle, he was in the military. He was a Vietnam vet. When he got out, he was a cop in Malden. He did that for a long time. My dad, he was in the jail growing up.
Working in the jail?
Yeah. That's another family member. That's a different story.
Everyone has one.
Everybody's got one of those.
Yeah, had a lot of jail experience.
I don't know if I would say it was so much in my blood. I just think I've always felt like I was meant to do something with myself to help people, whether it was getting into a firefighter or a law enforcement or something like that. I've just always felt like I had that itch where I was supposed to do something more with myself.
Outside of those family connections, was there ever like a moment you remember where you like saw something or experienced something? You're like, I want to be that guy. Like when you were a kid?
No. I had that moment later in life.
Right.
After I was a cop. That's probably how I got into K-9.
We'll get to that.
Like younger.
It was just the norm.
Yeah. Because it's so different now. When I was younger, you didn't talk to cops. I mean, you just didn't. You knew they were doing their job. You just left them alone. Hmm. Now everybody wants to talk to you. I mean, everybody wants to come outside and be like, should I be concerned? Yes, get in your house. Like, it's very simple. Like, there's a bad guy out here. Stop asking me questions.
Right.
Just go.
Right. Just go inside.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Did you ever think about the military? Or?
I tried when I was younger, but I started getting tattoos at a very young age. And back then.
Like seven?
Oh, yeah, right?
Yeah. That family member in the jail.
Yeah, that's what it was. Started real early. Yeah.
Dad showed me how to do it, man. It was great. All right, so the tattoos were disqualifying.
Yes. Right. Yeah.
They aren't anymore, though, are they?
No, not anymore.
Yeah.
No, but back then when I tried, it was a disqualifier. So.
Had to have any visible tattoos? Or?
Yeah, because back then I started early from my wrist up, so I think it had to be like under your sleeve or something like that.
Oh,
so,
okay.
Yeah. So I was a no-go, but
it worked
out for the best.
And then, so from the military, though, that attempt, that conversation, whatever that was, then it was straight to the law enforcement thing. So.
Yes. Yeah. So up north, it's completely different than down here. You have to take, it's called like a civil service exam, and they put it out once a year, and you just kind of show up at this place, and you just do a written aptitude test, I guess, just to make sure you know what you're doing, which I don't, but...
somehow you pass.
But
somehow.
You squeaked that one off. Yeah.
But you get put on the list, and they just go down it, and they just kind of start from the top and just kind of work their way down. So I did that for firefighter and for police, and I actually got hired by the Boston Police Department. And the difference between down here and up there is you have, like, the police side, and then you have the medical side. So my stepmom at that time, she was a lieutenant for the Boston Police Department. So I went through the whole process. They called her, and they're like, hey, your son, he's got the job. He's hired. He's all set. Then you got to go do the medical portion. And during the medical portion, they have, I'm probably going to say this wrong too, the Hishirashi test. It's that stupid circle that has all those dots all over the place and there's like a number behind it.
Mm-hmm.
I can't see those. I have a deficiency.
You're colorblind.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I'm sitting there and they give me the book and right away I'm like, crap.
Here we go.
Here we go. So I just look at it and I'm pretending. And then I was like, buddy, I know I can't do this. I've done it so many times because for the eye test when you're younger and you're growing up, I've always known that I couldn't do it. So they're like, well, that's a disqualifier. What are you talking about? He was like, yeah. He's like, that's a disqualifier. We can't hire you. I was like, you're joking, right? He's like, oh yeah. He's like, it's fine. He's like, you can take it to court. He's like, and you'll win. He was like, I'm like, why is it a disqualifier? I was like, what am I gonna be chasing a bad guy down the street that's in a red and green polka dotted suit with a number behind it? And that's the only way I'm gonna describe him. Like, so I was like, what are we talking about?
Let's talk about colorblindness for a second.
Yeah.
So it's just with when you put, like, you can see color, it's just when they throw other stuff with it is what messes
you? It's mostly, like, colors that are pretty similar. Like, I can see that your shirt's blue.
Right.
But, like, black, navy blue, red, green, colors that are very similar, I can't tell the difference. Like, there's plenty of
you
times.
You had me at black and navy blue, but then when you said red and green,
It's just all, like, bumbles together. Got or, like, grays or something. There's plenty of times where I'll pick something up and I'll say to my wife, like, oh, look at this gray shirt.
It's
not great.
Like, is what attracted you to law enforcement the fact that you get to wear a uniform and they tell you what to wear, so you're not just always wearing mismatched clothes?
Oh, no, because I love clothes. I mean, I know what color they are, but I love
I like this. I have no idea what color this is.
I mean, I just walk in, I see the model. I'm like, yeah, that's what I want. I'm like, I figure they know what they're doing.
Just don't tell me what color it is.
Yeah.
All right. So they're like, this qualifies you, but not really because you can go fight it. Why would you want to do that?
That's what I said. And at that time, I was already living down here, and I was actually in the academy on the east coast of Florida. I went to the academy in Palm Beach County. So at that point, I just kind of...
Forget it.
Yeah, I said forget it. I'm so like, I'm not wasting my time.
How did you end up down here?
There were a few things between high school and...
How'd I end up down here? So I used to build houses for a living, and back then, that was when... one of the depressions happened, I guess you can say.
Recession.
Like, depression.
See? They
kind of go together.
It's all the same. Mm-hmm. It's bad. We know it's bad.
Just, I don't speak English.
The bubble burst.
When people were poor.
Yeah. Got it.
So nobody was building houses at that point.
Right.
I had some family friends that we grew up with that lived down here over on the East Coast. And I went down on a vacation because I had nothing to do. And while I was down there, they lied to me. They were like, oh, you just moved down to Florida. There's so much work down here. You can find a job. You can do so much. And I was like, yeah. I was like, let's do that. So at that point, I had nothing going on. Wasn't married. No kids. Nothing holding me back. Mm-hmm. And I just said, screw it. Let's just try it. So I flew back home, packed up my truck, and just drove down here and just kind of winged it.
Yeah.
And well, it all worked out in the end. I mean, it was definitely scary doing it, especially at that age. I think it was... maybe early, mid-20s at that point. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, moved down to the East Coast, and the rest is history at that point.
Yeah. So then you start applying for jobs down there? Is that?
Yeah, so when I first moved down here, Bally's was a gym, Bally Total Fitness, and I got a job as a personal trainer there.
Okay.
And I started working there and made absolutely no money. No money. Like... Yeah, I looked the part, but I didn't know what I was doing.
Right. Like, yeah, I don't. That know, might be why.
Yeah, probably. Yeah. Probably. Like, I don't know how to help you out.
You suck.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, clearly you need help, but I don't know how to help you.
Yeah, just lift weights. I don't know. Do something.
But you kept, you know, your eye on the law enforcement piece though, while you're down there.
Yeah. And then living down here, I found out that you could put yourself through the academy. Mm-hmm. So that's what I did. I ended up putting myself through the academy. And once I was... done with the academy, I just kind of started shooting my applications everywhere. Mm-hmm. And at that point too, the same thing, nobody was really hiring. Palm Beach County, they wanted me to work for them, but they wanted me to work as a reservist. And in your 20s, I'm like, you're out of your mind. I'm like, you want me to do this job for free? And they're like, well, that's the only way you can get hired with us. I was like, well, you can pound sand because I'm not doing that.
You can work here, but you can't make any money.
Yeah, like, risk your life, but no money.
I'm already a reservist at Bally's, okay? Yeah.
Pretty much.
So how did you end up over here?
I think at that point I was probably just going online and looking up every single agency in Florida and just seeing who was hiring. Mm-hmm. And I even went to like the Panhandle. I went up there and applied for a job. I went to Ocala. I just went all over the place.
Were you partial to sheriff's offices or you just whatever? I mean, anybody that was hiring.
No, yeah. At that point I was just trying to get a job.
Yeah.
To be honest with you.
Anything.
Yeah. And I ended up getting the phone call over here, and me and Yeri Almada, who used to work here, we actually went to the academy together, and Philip Pione, we were
on
all
the East Coast.
Yeah, yeah.
Interesting.
We all went to the academy on the East Coast, and somehow we all got hired together. We were all in the same class, so.
How was the academy for you? Was it what you expected? Were you prepared?
The academy was good. I mean, physically I was prepared because I've always kind of made sure that I've kept myself in shape, hence the personal trainer at Bally's. I was really good at it.
right.
The physical aspect wasn't a big deal. I think it was more the same thing that was harder for me to grasp because I have like a curse and a gift. Mm-hmm. Things just kind of come out of my mouth. Mm-hmm. And then I think about it afterwards.
Yeah.
So I say a lot of things. So like being in the academy was the same thing because there was times where like if you're good, they make you like the class leader.
Right.
And then when you're a class leader, you're like, oh, I'm the boss.
Right.
And then you realize you can't say things as being a boss.
Is this going to be a recurrent theme throughout this podcast and throughout your career?
So were you the class leader?
I was.
Okay.
I was.
So it worked out?
Yeah, it worked out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
that was probably the only time in my life I actually semi-enjoyed running. I hate running, which is amazing because I have to run every day for a living now, but
right.
I hate it. Like, I just want nothing to do with running. And you have to run every single
everywhere,
day.
Everywhere.
I probably lost so much weight during that academy just from running nonstop.
What was the, like, were you, did you get hired here before you completed the academy, or you were done with the academy and then just kind of?
Yeah, I was done.
Okay.
Yeah.
So then you get the call here, you come do whatever you got to do, and you're good to go, pack up your stuff and come over here.
Pretty much.
And they don't care that you're colorblind here.
I don't think so. Maybe they don't know.
They didn't know until now.
Now they know. So
way to go, Laura. Yeah.
Sorry. Yeah.
We're just going to blame it on Laura, even though we talked about
this
5 minutes ago.
This podcast was going to get me fired.
That was the last thing I thought you were going to be fired for.
Me too.
I have a list of
There's
like
so many
things.
Others.
All right. So what year is this, by the way? Where are we at here? When you?
Oh, man, I'm going to have to do math now.
Like 2012?
Well, I got hired here in 2011,
okay.
I think it was.
Okay.
So yeah, probably 2010 ish.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you get started here, FTO. How's that go?
FTO is good. I was fortunate. I had some good FTOs. I didn't have anything crazy. I mean, obviously you hear all the horror stories, but realistically, the horror stories are just because you have FTOs that care and you have recruits that don't.
Right.
So I think that's kind of like what the misconception is when you have someone that's actually pushing you, and I think that's something that certain people have like. And I think that goes back to the same thing with like kind of almost the sports background, the military background, anything in that sense. Like you're okay with someone telling you what to do or how to do it because you know it's going to make you better.
Right.
And a lot of people don't do well with that, with
right.
someone telling them how to do something because they think they already know what they're doing.
Yeah,
so,
but you're right. It's the mentality piece. Yeah.
Yeah, pretty much.
So you crashed a lot of stuff.
Oh, was I did.
That,
I did.
Was that while you were still in FTO when you got out? Like,
No, I don't think I crashed at all. During FTO.
Okay.
It was for sure once I was by myself.
You can't leave us hanging, Justin. Do tell.
Yeah.
So one of them, when I was brand new, I was sitting at home and Russ Aiken, he was my corporal at the time, and he called me on the phone and it was late. He was like, hey, is there any way you can come in and do some overtime? And I was like, at that point, I'm brand new. I was like, yeah, absolutely, I'll come in. And he had me on Indian Rocks Beach. So I'm just driving on Indian Rocks Beach, and I'm just going. And, of course, I'm new, so I'm looking for everything all over the place. Like, there's got to be a bad guy out here on the beach. Mm-hmm. You know, there's really not on the beach. So I look over to the right, and I thought I saw, like, some shadow just running. And I was like, oh, I got him.
Because that's PC right
oh,
there.
Oh, right there, yeah. all day long.
Shadow
like,
running.
Yeah, I was like, I got that guy. So I put my Crown Vic in reverse and just floored it, and I drove right into the Indian Rocks Beach sign and crashed the crap out of that thing.
And the shadow got away.
Yeah. That bad guy got away.
It was just laughing.
It was his lucky day.
It was probably to somebody on a run because that's what you do.
But especially on the beach.
Yeah. Yeah.
So then that phone call was fun saying, hey, since you had me come in for overtime, I made some more work for you.
I just crashed the car.
Yeah.
Dang.
Any memorable first calls or experiences as brand new Deputy Feinberg?
Oh. Yeah. I mean, I have more crashes. Those are memorable.
Okay. Well, more crashes then.
So... I remember it was a night that it was a dark, rainy night.
There we go.
Yeah, got to set the mood. And there was a stabbing, legitimate stabbing over in 21's area off of Starkey Road. And I'm just flying. I'm like, I got to get there because I was so close. I was on Park Boulevard. And there was, I think it was Wayne Zielinski. He was first on scene. So he's getting on the radio, putting everything out. And I'm like, I got to get there. And I'm just hauling butt, just driving on Park Boulevard. And my Crown Vic, and I just hydroplane, and I just crashed into the curb, and I spun around, crashed into another curb, spun around, crashed into another curb, and then it finally just stopped, and I'm just sitting there like, holy crap. And I'm looking around, and I'm like, all right, nobody's here. And all of a sudden,
nobody saw that.
Yeah, they did. Some civilian drove up next to me, rolled down his window. He was like, are you okay? And I was like, yeah. He was like, that was the coolest thing I've ever seen. I was like, shut up.
So much trouble.
Yeah,
right now.
Pretty much.
Well, but no damage, no crash report.
I remember that was so long ago.
Yeah,
I'm sure I messed something up. I probably messed those wheels up in those rims for sure, banging into those curbs. Yeah. I could tell you I didn't make it to the call.
What if the stabber was that shadow that you missed out on the first time?
Oh, it's coming back.
He's going to haunt me forever now.
Yeah. But yeah.
I'll get you one day.
So you did SWAT at some point, yeah?
I did.
Yeah.
How long were you on before you decided you wanted to do that and why?
So SWAT was something I always wanted to do. It's the same thing. It just goes back to my background. I love physical stuff. Like, you can throw me in the dirt all day long and mm-hmm. I'll just go. Mm-hmm. I'm fine with it. So I love the physical aspect of it, but I also like the fact that it's like the elite of the elite.
That sounded mm-hmm. good.
That was all right. Yeah.
Second
that was good.
Time, the second time it sounded better.
Yeah. We'll fix it.
Take three.
Yeah, no, just leave
what
it.
What was it? What was it?
Everybody knows I can't talk. So it's something I always wanted to do, and I forget how many years on at that point, because things were different back then, mm-hmm. how long you had to be here before you could get into stuff. But yeah, it was something I always wanted to do, so I tried out. The trial was good. I liked it. I enjoyed being on SWAT. SWAT was a huge thing for me because it gives you that confidence. It teaches you how to be a much better cop, a better person in general, stuff mm-hmm. like that. So, I mean, the training aspect that you get from it is unbeatable in that right. sense. I think
worth it regardless.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. 100%. 100%.
And it's always been part-time, right?
Like, yes.
Yeah.
So for our listeners, some agencies do have full-time SWAT teams. We do mm-hmm. not here. So we have talked all about it with Sergeant Diebold, but it's another assignment. So you can be assigned pretty much anywhere in the agency and be a member of the SWAT team.
Yep. But it was good though. I mean, the same thing, you make lifelong friendships, lifelong stories.
Lifelong nicknames.
My nickname.
One of your nicknames.
I know. I have so many different nicknames. I mean, it's either Jersey, Boston. Snooki is the one that stuck the most, though, which is always fun when I'm walking down the hall and you'll see someone like Greg Danzig or Melvin Jackson who have these bars on their shoulders and they're like, Snooki! Everybody's like,
what
the hell is Snooki?
How does one obtain that nickname?
So I think it was during our SWAT banquet. I was up there talking, and I think Pion actually called me Snooki out of the blue, because that was when Jersey Shore was kind of just starting, mm-hmm. and I was so mad. I was like, how dare you call me Snooki? I was like, I'm Pauly D, if anything.
But Snooki stuff.
So I tried my hardest to reverse it and be like, you're Snooki. How dare you call me that? And it just didn't work. At that point, I was Snooki, so it's been that way forever now. Which like I said, it's hilarious because we're such a new agency now, and like I said, someone will yell that name out, and people just looking like,
what?
What are you talking about? So it's fun. I enjoy it. I've embraced it at this point.
Yeah, well, you almost have to. Yeah. When you got captains calling you Snooki.
Yeah. Can't tell him. Be like, you better watch your mouth, boy.
What? Any memorable call outs when you were on SWAT?
We did have a search warrant for a murder victim. Not murder victim. See, I told you, I can't speak English. A murder suspect.
Yeah.
How dare that victim die?
Yeah, right?
They're in trouble now.
Ridiculous.
Found him.
Yeah.
He's not moving.
Yeah. We had one in Clearwater. That was good. That was actually my first real search warrant that I ever did with SWAT. So, yeah, that one's memorable.
Yeah. What happened?
I don't know. They kicked in the door and got the bad guy. I was new. I was like on perimeter, just sitting there like, ooh, ooh, ooh. I can't believe I'm here.
We're doing cops.
Yeah.
That's hilarious. So you did it for 5 years?
Yes. Yeah.
And then just kind of had enough, wanted to move on?
No. So I would have loved to stay, but at that point I was in K-9 and K-9 takes a lot. I mean, mm-hmm. that's definitely something that you have to kind of put everything into those baskets. And at that point, I had my first daughter, and me and my wife, we were working opposite schedules, so it was virtually
just
impossible. Yeah, it was just too much.
A lot of training.
Yeah, there was
a lot of training with K-9 too, which we'll get into, so that's just a lot.
Yeah, it was a lot. And then having the fact that you have to be on call, mm-hmm. and if there's ever call-outs and stuff like that, it's just, so it was a decision I had to make for myself, my family, and K-9. Mm-hmm. I would have loved to stay, but like I said, because the training aspect, I mean, I still wish I was there, because it just... you kind of dust those cobwebs off and, mm-hmm. and kind of keep yourself good in that sense.
But, and like you said, it keeps you sharp, makes you better and everything.
Yeah, yeah. But it was good for while it lasted. Like I said, I don't regret it all. I had a lot of fun. I enjoyed it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So K-9.
Yeah.
What we're here to talk about, because everybody loves K-9. Mm-hmm. Was that something you always wanted to do? Why K-9?
It was. I think it's the same aspect, because you look at SWAT and you look at K-9, and I mean, they're both elite. in that sense. I mean, it's like the cream of the crop, and mm-hmm. you're just out there legitimately catching bad guys. Mm-hmm. So for me, it's something I always wanted, but the moment that it really, really settled in and I told him this story, because obviously I remember it, he doesn't because he didn't know the hell I was back then, but I was in FTO and Alan Clark was my FTO. We were working Dunedin and there was a burglary that came out. So like usual, we just go set a perimeter and do the thing that patrol does. And Matt Aiken was out tracking. So he caught the guy. Matt was a phenomenal handler. So, and when we're done, we all go back to where we are and Matt's sitting there and he's got his Crown Vic and he's just leaned up against the Crown Vic and he's got one leg kind of like posted up on the back and his arms are folded, just looking like the baddest mother you've ever seen. And I just looked at him. I was like, that's who I want to be.
I want to be that guy.
Yeah. Yeah. That's what I mean. So that was my moment later. When right. I saw that, I was like, ooh.
That's what I want.
That image is so cinematic.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Did
for
he
sure.
have like a fog machine and everything?
I wish. Yeah. I wish it was like that dark, rainy night again. The water was just trickling down his face. And you're just like, God.
And you just crash your way to the scene.
Oh, yeah. For sure. I'd crash into everything.
So about that specifically, though, that's like a, you know, because you're already out there, you're a cop, you're doing the job, but like, what is it about canine that makes it appealing?
So
because other people can't do that?
Probably. Yeah, you're right. Like the same thing, doing something that not everybody can do is a big aspect of it. But I think I figured it out later, once I actually got into canine, why I love this so much. It sounds weird, but it's like instant gratification, mm-hmm. right? So for me, being able to do this job, if someone commits a crime and they take off running at that point, mm-hmm. I mean, patrol will try to find them, but they're probably not going to find them because they're usually hiding or they just keep on running. A detective is not going to be able to come out and find that person. So for me, being able to show up, talk to that victim, ask them what happened, and then get my dog out and being able to track from point A to point B and be able to catch that bad guy and be able to go back to that victim and say, we did that for you. Like, we were able to find that person and put them in jail for you. Mm-hmm. That's, I mean, I don't know personally because I haven't been in that situation, but I can only imagine it's got to be such a huge weight lifted off of mm-hmm. them in that sense to know that now they can go to bed at night and just know that that person is still not out there
right.
and possibly coming back to cause more damage. So that right there is why time and time again, I will continue to do this job for as long as I can, because for me, it feels like we're actually really making a difference in that sense. I mean, we all get into this profession to try to make a difference, but I genuinely get to. Mm-hmm. So I love it. I love that aspect of it.
And now, so having been through SWAT tryouts.
Oh, yeah, that big debate. Everybody mm-hmm. always wants to know.
How does canine tryouts compare?
So they're both very physical, but I feel like you're kind of in control of both when it comes to your destiny in that sense. But for SWAT, I mean, it's all physical and then a lot of shooting. So you can either be in shape or you're not. You can practice a shoot or you cannot. So, I mean, you show up and you kind of, it's yours to lose in that sense for SWAT. For canine, it's different because it's very physical, but we also throw a dog in the mix. And you really have no control over that because that dog is probably not going to listen to you. It's a lot different too, because now you have a big group of people that are sitting there looking at you laughing because the dog does something silly and you mess up. So it's a lot more mental on that side as well for the canine tryout. So I think it's a combination of physical and mental, which is very, very draining. By the time you're done with our tryout, you're just smoked.
You're wiped out.
Yeah.
And you're sorry, go ahead, Laura.
I was going to say for the mental part, you think you can prepare for that, but you never know how you're going to react until you're there. You know, you think you're good with dogs until the dog bites you.
Oh, for sure.
You think you can handle.
And that's the thing. There are so many people out there right now that want to come to canine and they do a great job of reaching out to us and helping us out and train and stuff like that. And we'll try to get them prepared and get them ready. But come game day, it's mm-hmm. completely different. I mean, because for us, it's the same thing. Like we say it all the time. Everything goes right down the lead. So if I'm mad, if I'm angry, or if I'm stressed out about a call that just happened, or I'm just thinking about all this other stuff, and I go to get my dog out, my dog's looking at me like, I don't know who you are,
right. But
this isn't what we do. And it just messes everything up. So now you take someone that's never worked with a dog and give them that dog and then say, hey, go do this. And they're like, what are you talking about? Mm-hmm. So I'm sure they're nervous, sweating. Yeah, but so then the dog's looking at that person like, first of all, I don't know who you are.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And you smell bad. So I don't want to listen to you at all.
So let's back up a second. So just talk through the canine tryout a little bit. because it is the physical side. And then just to be clear, like they just throw you in there with some other handler's dog just to see how you react to the dog.
Yes.
Or maybe the dog is evaluating you. Who knows?
Yeah, a little bit of both.
Yeah.
So it starts off, they go to, we usually use Admiral Farragut, mm-hmm. and they'll do a swim test. They'll do the mile and a half run, and then they'll float or tread water for a certain amount of time. From there, they come back to the kennels, and that's when everything else kind of starts. We kind of walk them through everything, show them what they're going to do, and then we take them one by one. We'll have them do some PT, so they'll kind of run around our facility, come to like the 100-yard line. We'll have them do push-ups, flutter kicks, mountain climbers, something else, some exercises, just to kind of get the blood flowing and mm-hmm. kind of warm them up. And then from there, they run over, they jump over a concrete wall where the dumpsters are. Then they'll jump over a fence. Then they jump over another fence. And then they'll run to a cruiser, and we'll let them sit in the cruiser for 2 minutes, kind of catch their breath, get some water if they want. And then we'll dispatch them to a call. So they have to get on the radio and respond as if they're a canine handler, asking the proper questions and stuff like that. And then from there, they jump out of the car, and then they start running again. And they'll jump over another concrete wall. They go on the backside of the berms. They go up and over the berms a bunch of times, go through some tunnels. They do like a low crawl. It's physical. It's a lot, but it's maybe 5-10 minutes of your life. Mm-hmm. So that's what I mean. It's like the same thing. If you're mentally prepared for it, you should be able to get through it, and you should be okay. After that, we kind of give everybody a break, and then we bring the dogs in. So we'll have them do some agility. We have at the compound where we have all of our jumps and stuff like that. So we'll
actually have the person trying out
yes.
run the dog,
yeah,
see
yeah.
if they can. Yeah.
Yeah. Yep. We'll bring one of the dogs out. We'll explain to them what to do. And then we just give them the dog. And we're like, here you go. Have at it. So then they have to get the dog to do the obstacles that we're telling them to do, whether it's jumping over the hurdles, crawling over a catwalk, doing stuff like that. So that's when it always gets fun, because like we said, the dogs aren't going to listen. And
so you're testing their like temperament at
yes.
that point.
Yeah, absolutely. It's really more so we could see how they react with a dog that doesn't listen to them. We want to see if they're going to get frustrated, if they're going to get angry, if they're going to yell at the dog, or if they're going to try to figure out different avenues to get the dog to do what they're asking them to do, right? If they're going to think outside of the box mm-hmm. and do something along that line. So we do that. We'll have them heal, which again, it goes to show who's afraid of the dogs, because we've had people that have been out there and the arm is completely extended out and they're holding the leash as tight as possible and just mm-hmm. walking, because then you realize you're afraid of the dog. So it helps us out tremendously in that sense, where we see things like that. And then they take a bite from the dog. So that's also good too, where we can see if they actually are okay with taking the bite with the dog.
With a sleeve.
Yeah. They've
yes.
got the
Yeah. With the sleeve.
Well, I mean,
you're right.
Yeah. Have to clarify.
So they do all that kind of stuff. And then from there, we go up to Chichi Rodriguez and we put them in the jungle, which we found out there are jungles in Pinellas County. So that's a little inside joke in our unit, because I was tracking one day in Seminole and I was in the jungle. It was very thick. And they get on the radio and ask me if I'm okay. And I was so frustrated. I was like, yeah, give me a second. I'm in the jungle. And I said this on the radio. And of course, mm-hmm. everybody's like, the jungle. What are you talking about? We're in Pinellas County. There's no jungles. But then we found out, this was probably like a couple months ago, Paul Martin went to Panama and they have jungles out there. So we asked one of the guys that live out there, what's the difference between a jungle and a forest? And he's like, well, they're both densely populated, but a forest you can navigate through. In a jungle, you can't. I was like, ooh.
You're in the jungle.
I'm
then.
In the jungle.
Mm-hmm. You're right.
So now I'm just going to start saying it all the time.
Yeah. I mean, might as well, now that it's validated by one right. random guy
yeah,
in Panama.
Right. One random guy.
Yeah. Good
well,
enough.
I could look it up in the dictionary, but why would I do that? I get lost in general. I mean, whether I'm in the jungle or not. I mean, there's been times I'm out tracking and I'm like, all right, we're northbound. And I'm calling out streets and they're like, where are you? And I'm like giving out the streets and I start to get mad. And they're like, you're not going north, you're going south. And I was like, all right, well, then I'm going south. Yeah.
I'm going south.
Yeah, that's another
one. Come over here and take this dog.
Yeah. That's another one. My nickname is Magellan, because I never know where I'm going.
No way.
Yeah.
Well, it's not super important then to be in canine.
I mean, it is.
Do you want a tracker on your
dog? Yeah. Well, now that we have now that we have the GPS, it probably makes it much mm-hmm. better for people watching when I mm-hmm. call it the wrong direction. Like, he's an idiot.
Stop asking me rhetorical questions. You know where I am. So what you described though, leading is just the tryout. That is not even here's your dog and now we're going through canine school.
Yeah.
So you're one of the trainers for canine school.
Yes, sir.
So just talk us through that a little bit and what that, I mean, cause you've been through it now twice.
Yeah.
What is that like?
The same thing. It's so mentally tasking, honestly. Cause again, if you come into this job, you have to know it's physical. Honestly, like for someone to want to be in K9 and try out for K9, it's not like they haven't been sitting on the sidelines and see what we do and hear what we do. So they know it's physical. So you should be physically prepared to actually go through K9 school. It is such a mental mind mess up because, again, you have this animal that doesn't speak English, mm-hmm. that doesn't know you, mm-hmm. that has just came from Europe to our vendor over here. And they did some training, and then they came from there, and they came to our kennels, and then from our kennels, and they go to your house. So the dog is so upside down at that point, they don't know what's going on. And now you're trying to tell the dog to do something, and the dog's like, I don't know what you're doing. Mm-hmm. So it's such a mental aspect in that sense, because you could be doing everything perfect one day, and then the next day, everything just goes to crap.
Yeah, nothing works.
Yeah, or from like the trainer's aspect, because we're on the outside looking at it. So I'll tell you to do something today, and then tomorrow I'll be like, don't do that, do this. I'm like, well, you just told me to do it this way. I'm like, I know, but now listen to me. I don't want you to do it this way. So yeah, it's very, very mentally draining in that sense. It's a lot going through canine school. You have to have a very good support system at home and even in the unit. It's because it is. It's because even after canine school, I mean, this whole job is mental. I mean, you catch somebody one day and the next day you're a loser you don't catch anybody. So it's just you have to be such a bipolar person in that sense. So you have to be able to just kind of like let things go mm-hmm. and not let it dwell. So yeah, canine school is very difficult in that sense because it's very, very mental.
And it's 15 weeks?
Four months.
Okay.
Yeah. 16 weeks. Okay. Yeah.
And then we run the canine school for most of the agencies in the county, with the exception of St. Pete, right?
Yeah. St. Pete does their own, but Tarpon comes to us, Pinellas Park comes to us, Largo comes to us, Clearwater comes to us.
And we've got a school coming up,
right? We do. Yeah, we have tryouts coming up.
How many dogs we got for that one?
So Pinellas Park actually has three mm-hmm. that they're putting through. And John Haar, he's getting a new pup. Wyeth Whitehurst, he's getting a new pup. And then we're replacing an open spot that we have. So as of right now, it should be a 6-dog school. So, yeah.
How do you...
Which I'm glad it's... gonna be now, because all the schools I've taught lately have been in the middle of the summer.
Oh, and it is my God.
Miserable. Yeah. So I'm just so excited.
I mean, May isn't great.
I know, but I'm just
at
so
least
excited.
It's not August.
Yeah.
To see somebody else in that situation, like, it sucks. I can sit on the sidelines and be like,
How do you, I'm not sure exactly how to phrase it, but how do you figure out how a dog thinks? Because the dogs, they want to do their job. They know that you want something of them, and they're very, very eager to do whatever it is that you want them to do. And they're doing the thing that they think. They think that they understand what you want whenever they do something, probably.
Yeah.
So how do you figure out how they think and what mistake they're making in their head when they're trying to fulfill your orders and fulfill your wishes, but not doing the right thing? How do you get inside a dog's head?
So it is. It's difficult, especially depending on the dog. I mean, some of these dogs, their drive is just so out of control that it clouds their judgment. I mean, mm-hmm. like my dog now, Bo, he's nuts. I mean, he's such a good dog, but mm-hmm. when he sees that toy, his eyes bug out of his head and he's just like, he can't stop shaking. He's like, mm-hmm. give it to me. it's wild to see. So that's a lot harder than say like a softer dog, but really it's no different than human beings, right? I mean, we have essentials that we need to survive. You need air, you need water, you need food. I mean, there's mm-hmm. those type of aspects. So if you take something away, you'll do anything for it, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, even a human being, if I was like, I'm not gonna feed you or give you any water unless you do this, you might be like, yeah, pounce in. But at some point, you'll be like, all right, I need that water, I need that food. Mm-hmm. And it's the same thing with the dog. I mean, we use the food as a reward system. So it's a lot easier for them to understand you're getting fed through me. So until you do what I ask you to do, you're not getting food. Mm-hmm. So it's one of those type of things where, and the dogs are so smart that once they realize that and they pick it up, it just goes so much faster. So it's really all just feeding them, building that bond with the dog and getting the dog to trust you and understand that I'm here to help you. I'm not here to hurt you. I'm going to feed you. Just do what I'm asking you to do in that sense.
What about the times when they're trying, though? Like, I know you want me to track somebody. I'm tracking the thing I think you want me to track. Hey, look, I found it. But he's tracking, you know, your other handler that's behind you or something. But they understand kind of the assignment, but they're confused about something. How do you work out those little kinks in the training?
So
trial and error, maybe?
Kind of, pretty much. Yeah. I mean, we have such a regimen of how we do things. Like, we started off so little. And again, we use food for everything. So even with tracking, we put the food in the grass. Mm-hmm. And it just shows the dog, put your nose down and you'll get fed. Mm-hmm. But it's also incorporating the odor. So like, we'll walk with the, like, like a straight line track, let's say. Mm-hmm. And as we're walking, we'll put a bunch of pieces of food down the whole entire time. Mm-hmm. And then we'll bring the dog out. We'll give him the command, seek track. And we always say that every single time, right? Mm-hmm. So it becomes kind of like a cue. There's certain words that we say that it's a cue. And eventually they'll put their nose down and then they're pairing the food with the odor. So it's okay. Like they're getting reward with what they're doing and they don't even realize it already. They're mm-hmm. smelling the odor. They're smelling the crushed vegetation in the grass. Mm-hmm. And they're also getting rewarded because they're getting fed. So we start that off so slow. And that's such a long process that by the time we take the food out of it, they understand that human odor equals reward. Because like you're saying, right, mm-hmm. at the end of the day, they're wild animals.
Yeah.
And they know how to track in general because yeah. they have to in order to find food. So it's kind of like you're saying, taking it away where don't track the rabbit, I need you to track this person. Mm-hmm. So it's just repetition
yeah.
over and over and over and over again. And then the reward system, it's the same thing, showing them that you're either going to get food when you put your nose on a track mm-hmm. or there's a man at the end with a tug.
Yeah.
So it's just showing them that everything, realistically, everything the dog does in their mind is a game.
Yeah.
They think it's fun, 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 fun. So it's the same thing even with us. Like we have to act like silly gooses all the time. That's probably the hardest thing too for grown men or women mm-hmm. to come into this profession and tell them like, I need you to be a goofball. Like I need you to mm-hmm. get down on the ground, roll around like a kid, just act like a goofball. And a lot of times that's hard, especially with like macho men. But yeah, right, I ain't doing that. But like you will, or you ain't gonna make it. Mm-hmm. So it's really doing that, showing the dog that you're pleasing me, right? Like you were kind of saying, like if the dog does something great, I'm gonna act all crazy. I'm gonna act silly. I'm gonna scream. I'm gonna yell. I'm gonna run around. And the dog's like, oh my God, what did I do? What did I do? I wanna do it again. Because they want attention and affection just like we do. Yeah. So it's like showing them that is how we teach them. Like if you continue to do this, you're gonna continue to get rewards, you're gonna get pets, you're gonna get love, you're gonna mm-hmm. get all these things. So mm-hmm. it's in that. But if they're messing up, we just have to retrain it. I mean, uh-huh. like I recently had an incident where, again, because Bo is so smart, he knows where he gets his reward. So mm-hmm. he knows he gets it from usually the other people in our unit because we're laying tracks for each other. Mm-hmm. So it got to the point where as if the person that was with me, he's like, well, I get my reward for you.
Cut out the middleman.
Oh, yeah, 100%. So, like, he would start tracking, and he would smell yeah. odor, and he'd be like, all right. Mm-hmm. And then he would just circle back to the guy behind me and be mm-hmm. like, do you have my toy? So then that's a problem. So then mm-hmm. we have to recreate it and try to get away from that and teach him, no, it's not here, it's out there. Mm-hmm. You keep your nose down, and you'll find an even better reward over there as opposed to trying to cheat and just get a toy from this guy. Yeah, pretty much.
So I've always found the whole tracking piece super interesting because the way you kind of explained it was, you know, you're kind of breaking them down to teach them how to do X, Y, Z. But, you know, when you show up at a scene after somebody left on foot, like, how do you know that he's on the right
track?
Like,
yeah, so that's,
I mean, I know it's like typically the freshest. For, yeah. You mentioned the broken vegetation piece, but they're also smelling the human odor. So, yeah. Like, how do you, I mean, I've literally seen it. Like we've watched body cams. We've seen clips of it where the dog's like kind of, I don't know. And then you know, like even yeah. I know like, okay, that dog's yeah. on something. But like, how do you know it's the right one?
You really don't. I mean, yeah. sometimes. I mean, honestly, it really depends on the time of day. Like if it's 3:00 in the morning and someone broke into a vehicle and took off running, I highly doubt there's anybody else. I mean, sometimes there's people out walking around. But for the most part, whichever odor I find first is probably that bad guy. Mm-hmm. But either way, we're going to go with it no matter what. I mean, there's times where we're out tracking and we'll say, like, listen, I'm on something. I don't know what it is. I'm just going to go with it. So if he shows me that he has tracking behavior, I'm going to go with it. But for the most part, we can tell the difference because there's a difference in, say, somebody taking like a leisure walk or jog and then that fear odor.
Mm-hmm.
The dogs are so much more intense when it comes to that. Like if you just get out and you're just, the same thing with us, right? Like if somebody kind of walks out a track for us, the dog will track. But then when the dog's tracking a legitimate track and it's an actual, say, bad guy, everything about them is different, right? Their posture is a little bit different. They're more intense. Like they're really, really pulling. You can definitely tell the difference between that kind of odor once the dog kind of figures it out. After they've, say, caught somebody in real life, then they realize, like, okay, that's the odor that I want. That's the reward I want.
Mm-hmm.
You can kind of tell the difference.
So like
you
they
can
smell the fear.
Yes.
Yeah. So you can never really get that in training until they get out there and get their first bad guy.
And that's honestly the hardest thing for new handlers and new dogs because mm-hmm. you'll go through school and your dog's tracking phenomenal. You're like, oh, I'm going to catch everybody. And then you get out and the dog smells the fear odor for the first time and the dog's like, what is that?
Mm-hmm.
Because they're so used to something else.
Yeah.
So it's like it kind of takes them a little bit. That's why it's a process. It takes some time for the handler and the dog to really kind of connect in that sense and kind of figure it out. And even for the dog, because they know what they're doing, mm-hmm. but again, it's still brand new. The picture's brand new, right? It's a different odor. It's a different environment. Dad or mom is completely different because now my nerves are going crazy because on a training track, you're like, whatever, mm-hmm. I got this. And all of a sudden now it's a legitimate call.
Yeah.
You have all your peers listening. Yeah, yeah. Like everything's going on. And again, right? It's like, I'm the end all be all. If I don't catch this guy, it's like, wah, wah, wah. And if you catch him, you're a hero.
Right.
So that's very difficult for a lot of new handlers to be able to sit there and kind of be able to grasp that and understand, like, you have to keep your nerves in check in that sense. So it's a lot. Yeah.
When you train, do you only train with other law enforcement? Do they ever cue in on just like law enforcement specific smells, like, you know,
no, so
gunpowder break free, things like that you're going to have on you? Or do you ever bring civilians in for them to smell regular folk?
So not so much that we bring civilians in, but a lot of times what we do, because like you said, it's mostly other law enforcement people. Mm-hmm. So like, say if I'm just kind of standing around, I've done this before. If I see somebody just walking down the street mm-hmm. and they're just going for a stroll, mm-hmm. like, hey, can you do me a favor? Can you just take this tug toy and just go for a walk and just drop it wherever you want to drop mm-hmm. it?
I promise you won't get bitten
end. Yeah. And then I'll wait a little bit and I'll get mm-hmm. my dog out and I'll track that person. And find the toy at the end. So it's just a little trick that we can do sometimes.
Pretty cool,
along
yeah.
those lines. Mm. Yeah.
So when Bo's a good boy, what do you tell him? What does he hear? What's your praise voice?
That's what I say. I have so many nicknames. It's Tigger mm-hmm. from Winnie the Pooh.
Mm-hmm.
And it just happened. I don't know how it happened because you're just sitting there. And again, it's like, well, you got to be silly. And I'm going to try to do it now. That's what it was. So like when I had Ronan and I'm sitting there and he did something good, I was like, good boy, good boy. And it just stuck.
It just stuck.
So, and the crazy thing is too, is so like I was called Tigger because of my voice,
mm-hmm.
but Ronan, even till this day as retired,
your first dog. Yeah.
When he gets excited, he goes up on his back hind legs and he jumps straight up in the
deck. No way.
Like, oh yeah, it's so weird. So like the same thing. So I get all crazy and I'm like, hoo-hoo, like that. And then Ronan's jumping up and down like Tigger. So mm-hmm. the combination of both
it
of
works
us.
Out.
Yeah, mm-hmm. we're Winnie the Pooh for sure.
So let's back up to your first dog. Let's back up to Ronan. So you go through the trials and tribulations, because I imagine you've described all this because mm-hmm. you've been through it, obviously.
Yeah.
So did you have like a memorable first catch? Like, what was that like?
We did. So our first catch was a stolen vehicle, and they ended up, I don't remember if they crashed or if they just bailed, but it was 611 and, it's not Boot Ranch, 611 and like Tampa area, mm-hmm. kind of like that industrial area mm-hmm. right there, right where it kind of splits.
Mm-hmm.
And they bailed, so I show up and Matt Aiken was with me. So I get Ronan out and we hit that track in the grass and we just start going. And at that point, I'm like in heaven, just running. And we're tracking, we get through that industrial area. And at that point, we had a second sighting for another subject. So Matt left, he went and got Bosco and started tracking that person. So at that point, I'm by myself and I have no clue what the hell I'm doing.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm just trying to figure it out and just going around. And everybody was like, just trust your dog. I was like, I don't trust him yet.
Easier said than done.
Yeah. But somehow he knew what he was doing. So he was able to kind of like track through that industrial area. And we ended up finding the kid hiding in some bushes. So that was our first catch. And I for sure got on the radio and screamed like a big girl. I can't help it. I'm like, it's so exciting for me. The same thing, like I purposely screamed like a girl. I remember we had a call on the same thing on the beach. There was a stolen vehicle. They bailed. They ran to the beach. And Brad Byers gets out and he tracks a Troy. And we were out for probably an hour running around in the sand, just going and going and going. We couldn't find him. So then Wyeth Whitehurst gets out. Devin tracking the same thing for like an hour, just running around. And meanwhile, I'm back up the whole time. So I've just been running the whole time, just miserable.
Without your dog.
Yeah, without the dog. Mm-hmm. The sun's coming up now. And like we said, it's on the beach. People are starting to come out everywhere. So at that point, I was like, you know what? Let me just get Ronan out and just see what we can do. And we just started working north. We start going through underneath like the parking garage, and we end up finding the kid hiding underneath the vehicle. And we're probably like 3 hours into it at that point. And I was so excited. I purposely hit my radio and I was like, woo! I did a Ric Flair moment. So bad, so bad. Brad looks at me, he's like, what the hell is wrong with you? I was like, you kidding me? Yeah, I was like, this long? I was like, and we still found that dude? I was like,
him?
Everybody needed to know how excited I was. I was like, I made sure everybody knew.
You had another catch with Ronan, was like a prisoner, a handcuffed guy that got away.
Oh, yes. Yes.
That was a good one.
That was a good one. So I was actually all the way in South St. Pete that day with Vowu. We were looking for a wanted subject. And I hear something on the radio, and I'm not even sure what it was, but I knew they asked for a dog. So I'm like, all right, I got to go. So I just start driving. And I'm driving north. And again, I'm not really sure what it is. And then I start to realize that it was an escaped prisoner. So we get there. It was off East Lake Road over by that Publix. Mm. I think it's like Ridgemore area.
Mm-hmm.
And
so somebody that escaped from a transport van or whatever.
This dude was handcuffed. He got away and ran in handcuffs. He was still handcuffed and just took off running. So at that point, Sergeant Killian, he gets called out. So he meets up with me and we start tracking. So we're tracking through the apartment complex. We actually come out to the backside of Publix. And now it's just that whole wooded area where all those swamps are. So at that point, I'm like, I'm just going to do a point to point. It's basically just working the dog in the wooded area, looking for the head snap for him to go in where the bad guy went in. So I do the point to point. Ronan goes into the woods. And now me and Mike are in the swamp. The water is probably like mid thigh. Ronan's not even tracking. He's just swimming, just going. And we're just going through the water. And as we get probably mid into the swamp, we can't see anything. There's nobody around. But all of a sudden, out of nowhere, Ronan just dives under the water and bites the dude. Oh, yeah. This dude saw us, obviously, before we saw them.
Mm-hmm.
And he held his breath and just went completely underwater, like the Predator. Oh, yeah.
Wow.
He was Arnold Schwarzenegger just underneath there, just hiding.
That's incredible. He just went, bit him underwater?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So that was awesome. And then, of course, too, like the same thing. I was so excited. We get out of the swamp. And there's all these people here. And of course, I'm like, who wants to come to K9? And I'm all excited. Meanwhile, I have this massive mud star just sitting there on the top of my head, just sitting there on my face as I'm just sitting there talking trash to everybody, like, yeah. And they're like, you look like a clown.
Hey, it's exciting, though.
Yeah, and so that's dark. Like, you don't know what's in that water.
Oh,
anything.
Yeah.
Forget
like,
that. No way.
Yeah. And for me, it's growing up in the city, it's amazing. I will go into the jungles all day long and hunt a human being. I mean, that's why it's funny. When people ask me what I do for a living, I tell people I'm the Predator. We hunt human beings for a living. I mean, legitimately.
Mm-hmm.
I'll do that all day long. I don't fear it. Gators, snakes, spiders, oh no. I will scream like a girl and run the other way.
But you have to run through so many spiders.
I know, trust me. Oh, trust me, we do. I close my eyes.
Oh, it's not there. Ooh. It's not crawling down my back.
Oh, yeah, like there was one time I was tracking, and I mean, this spider web was massive,
mm-hmm.
and I just had to just eat it. And I'm just going, because at that point you can't do anything. The dog's pulling you, so mm-hmm. I just ate it. It's all over my face. It's everywhere.
No.
If it reassures you at all, none of the spiders that make webs in Florida are venomous.
I don't care. It doesn't. I don't like them.
No,
you're gonna tell me all the snakes aren't venomous either. I don't want to touch them. I just don't. Yeah, I don't want anything to do with it.
And you know, like if you run through a spider web and it's like, whoa. Like, I was a big-ass spider that made that web.
Oh, trust me. And that's the problem. Like, when it gets that close and you see it and it's right in front of your eye and you're like, ooh, that's big.
Yeah.
But luckily, it didn't get me and it flicked up in the air and ended up going on the guy behind me.
Perfect.
So, like, 45 minutes later, I get a phone call and he's like, I got out of my truck. He was like, and that spider crawled out of my vest. And I was like, yes.
Nope.
Dang.
Yeah. Oh.
Nope.
Yeah,
how do you not translate that down to your dog, though, when, like, the fear, like, going through? Because I would be, like, squirmy and just...
No.
Oh, yeah.
I wouldn't even. That one night you went and covered... I wouldn't even do that, what you did, when you covered canine.
Well, they were all in front of me, so they kind of cleared it.
Don't matter.
Yeah. I mean, I'm glad that she was there, because if anything happened, I'd just push her aside. I hear something. I'm like, sorry, Ashley.
Yeah, I'm going to do it again, too. I'm going to go. The next tryout, I'm doing it again.
Then you had, there was one where Ronan got injured.
Yes.
His paw or something.
Yeah, that was a good catch. So we had, he was a sexual predator, and he ended up breaking into a home. The woman woke up, so he took off running. It was down in Lealman area. So I get there with Ronan, we start tracking, and we end up tracking to 275. And those fences are the worst because there's no crossbar. They have like the spikies on top. So a lot of times we'll try to avoid that. We'll either get another dog on the other side or we'll have to figure out something how to do. But at that point, it was do or die. Like, mm-hmm. we needed to go. So Ronan jumps over the fence. We track across 275, both lanes, go back into a wooded area, and we ended up finding this guy. Ronan bites him, and at that point, the fight is on. Like, this dude legitimately wanted to fight. He was, like, there's, sometimes you come across, like, that 1%, like, those true, true bad guys.
Right.
That don't care.
Yeah, he was one of them.
Yeah, yeah, like, they want to fight. So, we were in a fight. Ronan messed that dude up. He messed him up good. Good boy.
Do the noise. Do the praise noise.
Yeah. So,
How do you fight somebody when your dog is also fighting them? I mean, does your dog pay attention to whose hand is whose when you're...
Yeah, so for the most part, usually once our dogs lock on, they're there. Like, they won't let go.
Okay.
So for the most part, like...
So you can just punch
him.
He's not going to adjust. He won't adjust. He'll stay there.
Yeah, he got that guy good. So luckily, but
don't,
I mean...
Don't fight the dog.
Yeah, don't fight the dog. But so when it was all said and done, I get him back to the truck, and then once everything kind of cools down, I open up the back of the truck to check on him, and there was blood everywhere. And at that point, I start checking him out, and when I looked at his paw, his pad was actually completely flayed open, just completely, like, to the meat.
Oof. So, and that's why he was so mad.
Yes, yeah. And so that was from him jumping over the fence. But again, that happens. It's a testament of how good these dogs are, right?
Like,
he didn't stop.
They know at the end of the day, like, they have a job to do, and they will, like, our dogs will jump through fire if we tell them to, like, because we teach them that, like, right? We build them up and tell them, like, you're invincible, you can do whatever you want as long as you're with me. So he didn't make a sound, and then we found it afterwards, and then he was out for probably like 3 months because that cut was so bad.
Poor guy.
It's crazy,
man.
Always something. Dogs are always getting hurt. People are always getting hurt.
You're somebody accident prone like you.
Oh, I'm so broken.
Wait, when was the time you fell into the 7-foot hole? I don't remember. Was that in FTO?
So that was in canine school.
Okay.
So
with Ronan.
7-foot hole.
Yeah. Okay. So
Indiana Jones over here.
Yeah. Yeah. So we were in canine school and we were walking out tracks for each other and we were over by our special ops warehouse and I'm running back from the track. And I'm going in the middle of the parking lot, and I see this big, massive opening. And I'm like, ooh, that's a shortcut. Let me just go. And it is pitch black. I can't see anything. And I'm just running. I'm like, yeah, I'm going to get back there real quick. And all of a sudden, out of nowhere, I had a Wile E. Coyote moment. And I ran off the dock. And I just completely ate crap. Like, it just, I messed myself up. I thought I was going to die.
So it was like hovering in the air with your legs
probably,
going.
Probably. I probably fell immediately, but I felt like I was up there for like 30 seconds just sitting there like looking around like my shadow's in a drop, my body still be up here. Oh, yeah.
It was like a loading dock?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
That would be terrifying in the dark.
It was. It hurt. And then later we found out that they went back and put up gates, so I probably changed that. They probably watched it on video.
There's like, a reason. These are the Justin gates.
Yeah, I need like baby proof gates everywhere.
Little baby gates. That's awesome. So now you have Bo.
Yep.
And you just graduated with him last year, right?
Yes. I believe this June will technically be 2 years.
Okay. Since starting school.
From starting school. Yeah.
What's his personality like compared to Ronan?
Oh, he's crazy. He is.
Is he still a leg humper? No, I know. He was. He was like wrestling. He wasn't.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. He likes to jump on people. Mm-hmm. He's a very friendly dog, but.
Very.
Is that like adding insult to injury if he's biting you and humping you? Bad guy.
Bad for that person, not for me. I mean, I hope I get it on body camera.
Send it to us if you do.
Yeah. But yeah. It's funny, in the beginning stages, they were both kind of similar because they were both a little squirrely. So Ronan was also called Reckless Ronan when he was younger because he would just do crazy stuff. Like we would have him at the top of the catwalk and instead of walking down like a normal dog would, he would just sit there and look and just jump completely off. Oh. And that's, probably like 7 feet in the air. And he would just jump for no reason. Huh. So he was a handful when I first got him and it took a lot. And Bo is a handful, for sure. For sure, he's a handful. But that's because, like I said, his drive, it's insane. Hmm. It's insane. But that's what I want. I want that. Like, I want that drive because, like I said, that dog's going to save my life. No question about it. Like, he will go through fire. He will do anything I ask, that dog's going to save my life.
You'd rather have a dog you have to reel back a little bit.
Oh, 100%. It's almost the same thing like with people, right? Like, mm-hmm. it's a lot harder to take someone and push them
mm-hmm.
and be like, hey, I need you to work. I need you to work. I need you to work.
Yeah.
I'd rather be like, calm down. I get it. Let's reel it back a little bit. Mm-hmm. So it's almost the same thing with a dog. It's a lot harder to get a dog to get to the point where he needs to be if he's a little bit of a softer dog, as opposed to getting a dog that has as much drive as Bo, because then you can reel that back. Or as they get older and then they realize what they're doing, they start to kind of mellow out a little bit. So mm-hmm. yeah, for sure. I'd rather that drive all day long. I mean, we pay a lot of money for it. Mm-hmm. So I'd rather have the best than something mediocre. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So corporal in the canine unit.
Yeah.
So there's a sergeant.
Yes.
And then two corporals.
Yeah.
What does your actual responsibilities kind of look like? Because now you're not just one of the guys, right? Yeah. You're a leader in the unit. So
yeah.
what does that look like?
It was a change at first mm-hmm. for me, for sure. Because like you said, it's you're like one of the boys.
Mm-hmm.
Joke around with one of the boys, say stuff. And like I said, I have that curse. It just stuff just flies out. Mm-hmm. So I just say it's usually to make myself laugh, but I usually get a laugh out of somebody else too.
Yeah.
But
it's usually at someone else's expense.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
You know,
yeah.
It's always
yeah.
gotta be.
Yeah. So you realize like you can't do that anymore, right? Because like you said, you're in a position where you're something else. So that was a big change for me, is trying to figure out that I'm still one of the boys, but I have to act professional at that sense and kind of like tone that stuff back.
Mm-hmm.
But
how's that going?
It's good.
Okay.
Right, Mike?
Yeah. So like what are the responsibilities that you have, like actually as corporal? Like, I know that you guys help with scheduling demos and things like that, but that's just the stuff we see. I mean, what's.
Yeah. I mean, so for the most part, I mean, obviously if Mike isn't working and he's off,
sure.
we'll take on that full responsibility. So we approve reports, we approve all the training logs and stuff like that. And then like you're saying, scheduling and a lot of stuff. We help out with a lot of the day-to-day stuff to kind of take that burden off of Mike, because he's got enough going on. So mm-hmm. we're there to help out. And then when we're working, obviously we're there to, if there's a bite, we'll go, we'll take care of everything. We'll do like our post-bite interview. So there's definitely a lot more admin stuff that comes along with it,
sure.
but it's good. I'm enjoying it. I like it.
And people don't realize, I mean, we actually have a really, like, we really don't bite that many people
no.
in the big scheme of things. Most
no.
of the time we're just finding them because, like you kind of alluded to earlier, people.
Yeah.
See you or hear the dogs are like, yep, I'm good.
Yeah,
except for that 1% that wants to fight.
Yeah.
I want to know, like, what's a post-bite interview?
Yeah.
Oh, so you got bit. Interview the dog?
Where did he bite you? Right here.
Yeah. Yep.
Does it hurt?
How are
yes.
you feeling?
Thank you, sir.
Pretty much. So if we do have a dog bite, we have a series of questions that actually went through our legal team, and we'll ask them questions pertaining the dog bite. And it's always verbatim. Like, we have an actual list. And when I speak to somebody, I'll tell them, be like, listen, you know, Corporal Feinberg from the Sheriff's Office, I have some questions to ask you strictly about the dog bite. That's all it is. And I'll show them the questions, and I'm like, these are verbatim. And we go down that list, and it's more to, so we can type up a report as well and talk about what happened, what were the circumstances, if they saw the dog coming, if they knew that we were looking for them, stuff like that. It's more for us to kind of have something on the back end that we have in writing about how the incident happened.
Hmm. Do you think people lie on that most of the time? Like, I didn't know.
It's not.
Like,
it's,
does it help them? Or
it's not so think? Much lie. Well, people definitely lie to us.
Yeah.
But I think in that moment, they're not really sure what's going on, and they definitely exaggerate a lot. So a lot of times you'll ask, and some will tell you to pound sand. And you're like, all right, whatever. It is what it is. But like one of the questions is you'll ask them, how long was the dog on the bite for? And we just had one recently, and I asked a lady, and she told me 15 minutes.
Yeah.
I was like, yeah, you're out of your mind. But they think it's 15 minutes. So I document it and say it was 15 minutes. I mean, it's not, but... So it's not so much that they lie.
Just their perception of whatever it was.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Mm. Okay.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah, well, it works out.
Do all the corporals teach canine school and... Or no?
Yes,
is that part
no.
of the role?
No, it's not part of the role. But so like, Paul Martin is an instructor. He can teach mm-hmm. if he wanted to. I'm an instructor. John Haar is an instructor now. Wyeth is an instructor. Dominic Brissett is an instructor. So at this point, we have multiple instructors where it just kind of works out, whereas if who's able to do it. So like, I've taught a lot of the most recent schools, but now that John is an instructor, he taught the last school. Mm-hmm. And then he's actually going through this school with his own dog, so he'll teach that school as well. So
with his own dog?
Yes.
Also?
Yeah.
Oh, Oh, wait, I think, did you do that with Bo? Yeah, you did that with Bo.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, it's difficult because you have to put a lot of time and effort into everybody else. Because again, right, like it's your name that's on that product. So you're trying to make sure that when that dog's ready and that dog goes out, people know, okay, well, that dog was trained by so-and-so, so it's going to be a good dog. So you almost kind of put your dog on the back burner a little bit because you're really making sure everybody else knows what they're doing. But then it's not such a bad thing because it's a lot easier for me to kind of catch up. So I can concentrate on other people. And then if I need to worry about something else in the back end, I can do it. So
you also you also teach detector schools.
Yes.
Right. Do you teach both of them or just one
so,
or the other?
Yeah, we'll do patrol school first. And then when patrol school is over, then we'll do a detector school. Usually we like to wait at least about a year
for the dog.
Yeah. Before the dog goes back into school for detector school, kind of making sure that they're solid, that they know what they're doing because that's their secondary job.
Right.
Primary is tracking and catching people. So we want to make sure that dog's not having any issues and that they're good to go and that they're doing their job, they're catching people, and then we'll put them in detective school.
Right, and for our listeners, so all of our dogs, well, except for the bloodhounds, they're single purpose. They slobber on you, but...
they stink, too.
but all the other dogs, the Sheps and the Shep Mows, all that stuff, they are all patrol dogs, which means they're out there looking for bad guys, apprehension, but they're all dual certified. So they're patrol and something else.
Yes, all our dogs are split.
And it's either drugs...
Drug or bombs.
Or bombs.
Yep.
And the detector school obviously covers both because you're teaching them about the scent.
Yep.
So talk about that a little bit. I mean, how hard is it? Is it a tough thing to teach dogs that additional thing to kind of give them that? Because they're not scent. I've always wondered about this because they're not scent discriminate when they're tracking somebody.
So they are.
They are.
They can definitely scent discriminate. And again, right, it's if you get them in that odor. So
sorry, that's what I meant. It's the freshest odor. Yes. It's not like a specific person.
Yeah. Once they lock in that odor, then they're scent discriminating at that point. They're not going to leave that odor to go find another odor once they're locked into that one. But with detector, it actually isn't that difficult because we've already shown the dog odor equals reward.
Mm-hmm.
So now it's just a different odor.
A specific odor.
So it's the same concept. And now all we're doing is just teaching the dog like, okay, you know, human beings equal reward. Now smell this odor, whether it's drugs or bombs. And then it's basically the same thing where it's like in the beginning, it's food and the grass, right? So it's an instantaneous, like smell the grass, smell the food, get the reward.
Right.
And then we do the exact same way with detector school. As soon as they smell the odor for the first time, they're getting a reward right away. Like it's instantaneously. And then it immediately clicks. And then they understand, oh, I know this game. I smell this, I get reward. I smell this, I get reward. So that's pretty much how you start it in detector school. And then the same thing towards the end, they pretty much got it. They understand. And again, obviously we have multiple odors and we'll start with one and then we'll just go from odor to odor to odor to odor. Luckily for drugs, we only have three odors, but for bombs, usually we have probably 9 to 10 odors that we're locking them in before they're even done with.
See, and I thought it would be the other way around.
Yeah. Me too.
Like drugs would be way more complicated than bombs.
Yeah.
What drugs do you train them on?
Cocaine, meth, and heroin.
Okay.
Yeah.
So not pot like people think.
No, no. We
I can smell that myself. I can
pretty much. I mean, honestly, that's what it comes down to, right? It's still plain smell, but We took it away from all of our dogs because of the way that things are going. Obviously, with it being medically legal, if it eventually just becomes legal in general, we didn't want to have to deal with that because then that's an issue. You have to try to retrain the dogs or get them off the marijuana. So it was just a lot easier for us not to even worry about it at this point.
So then for bombs, for explosives, what all things are they learning? Like scent-wise?
I was thinking
just like gunpowder.
There's black powder. There's like double base, single base. There's C4. There's Syntex. There's like we even use stuff like cutting tape, like things that you'll actually use to make a bomb, not so much the bomb odors. We use things that they actually use to make the bomb. So it's a lot. The bomb side of it is a lot more in detail than it is for the drug side, for sure. Whether it's tracking or whether it's detector work, the dogs do something specific that we can't teach them.
Right.
Like we manipulate them to sit, to down, to heel, to do all those type of things. That's the kind of the stuff that we manipulate them to do. But when they get into odor, every dog has something very specific that they do. Like they may kind of like crouch down a little bit, they may bracket a little bit. Some dogs' tails goes completely straight out, some kind of wag. So when you get your dog, those are the things that you're studying. So it's the same thing. That's why we always have backup with us, because I'm focused on my dog the whole entire time, because I'm watching him, because I know what he looks like when he is in odor. And as soon as he gets out of odor, he doesn't look the same. So it's the same thing with detector work. That's something that we can't teach them. It's almost inherent in them, right? Mm-hmm. Where as soon as they smell that odor, they know it equals reward and they do something, whether, like I said, it's bracketing or just sitting down a certain way, and they'll do it every single time. So it's their telltale in that sense.
And that's something that you use when you articulate,
yes,
you know, whatever. Yeah, yeah. So they did this.
Oh,
thing.
Yeah. So for like the
drug
dogs.
Because you teach them, because when you say, when you use the word manipulate, it might sound a certain kind of way, but that's just what you've taught them through everything,
yes,
else is what they do. So yeah, they do something different when they find somebody as well. Interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. And this may be what you said a little bit ago, but like if you show up to a scene because someone ran off or whatnot, do you know for certain that, or do the dog, does the dog know that it's person time, it's not drug time,
yes,
you know, or whatnot? Because yes, I know you said, like, what do you say? Seek track.
Yeah. Okay. But it's also, it's a cue. It's a picture. The dogs learn in pictures. Mm-hmm. So if you do the same thing over and over and over again, they understand. So when we track, we hook the line up to their harness. As mm-hmm. soon as you hook it up to their harness, they know what they're doing.
Let's go
they know,
mode.
Yeah. They know yeah, they're tracking. For detective work, I'll take the leash and I actually hook it up to Bo's collar. And that's what I do when I'm doing my detector work. It's never on his harness. Mm. So if it's hooked on his collar and we're walking around, he knows he's looking for bombs. If it's on his harness, he knows he's tracking. Mm-hmm. So it's the same thing because we do that over and over and over
again.
Yeah,
it's conditioning.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah.
Oh. Okay, that makes sense.
Yeah.
What's the next step if you find explosives?
Run away.
Okay.
Yeah. No, oh, we will call a Tampa Bomb Squad.
Okay.
Yeah.
Does that happen?
It has. I mean, well, we use them in general a lot because the thing is, if it's something very specific, if someone calls, obviously if someone calls in a bomb threat, mm-hmm, and says like, hey, there's something here, and we show up and there actually is something there, mm-hmm, we're not going anywhere near it.
Right.
There's no reason for it. If there's a credible threat and we see something, we're just calling the bomb squad and they'll just
take
care of
it. So if they say there's a bomb in this building or something, and then there's a backpack where there shouldn't be a backpack,
yeah,
you're not going to send them up to smell the backpack. You're going to back away or...
It honestly depends. Mm-hmm. We have...
Or a mysteriously wrapped package. Yeah. Maybe a backpack is too ordinary.
Yeah. It just honestly depends on the circumstances and the totality, mm-hmm, of everything.
Okay.
But there have been plenty of calls where there are bomb threats or just something in general, and there is a package, and we will sniff it. But, mm-hmm, I mean, there was one in Bay Pines, and uh-huh, there was a box that was sitting in the parking garage. It was a handmade box. Like, you knew someone did something,
yeah,
and it was just left there. So the same thing, they called us, and I showed up, and I went to the parking garage, and I looked at it, and I was like, yeah, I'm not putting my dog on that, because, mm-hmm, there's no reason to. Like, especially at Bay Pines, they get threats all the time.
Right.
And when you see, yeah, something that looks like somebody built it, it had like little legs on it where it was kind of like sitting up off the ground a little bit, I'm like, I'm not going anywhere
suspicious
near that.
Suspicious enough.
Yeah.
Just,
yeah.
Yeah.
So at that point, yeah, you just call the bomb squad and, yeah, they just come in and deal, yeah, with it.
And you do a lot of proactive work too. I mean, there's, of course, here in Tampa Bay, we have sports teams. We, yes, have all kinds of special events, Gasparilla. We have VIP visits and
yeah, like right now we're doing the Blue Jays,
right,
so we take care of all the Blue Jays games. But yeah, like you said, Gasparilla, Epiphany, there's a lot of different events
of
that
sweeps.
We're always helping out. Every time someone political comes into town, we're always doing sweeps for them.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, there's a lot of work.
Yeah, that's, it's a whole good other aspect of it, I think, that people don't,
yeah,
you know, don't realize.
Yeah,
it's like that's why you see dogs at events for that,
oh, yeah,
reason.
Yeah. So is Bo then, he's explosive?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
It was Ronan too.
Yeah,
yeah,
okay, yeah. Usually, once you're something, you kind of stick with it.
As yeah,
but it's okay, also because bomb dogs are better.
They're the elite.
Yeah, they're the elite.
Elite.
The elite bomb dogs.
I can smell nine things.
When was the last time your drugs blew up?
Yeah. Uh-huh.
I mean, yeah, yeah. So I imagine when
you haven't been to a meth lab. I mean, they do. Yeah.
Fair.
With you know, you have to do sweeps for events and stuff like that. Or if a bomb threat comes in, that's when they would do that. What about like a drug call? Like, is there a drug call? Like,
so for, especially for patrol, I mean, our drug dogs get utilized a lot when it comes to patrol. I mean, anytime,
really?
Somebody does a traffic stop, if they want a dog to come and sniff the car, they'll come and,
really?
Sniff the car.
Oh,
so yeah,
okay,
so during patrol,
that,
yeah, the drug dogs are getting used all the time. Yeah.
Huh. Okay, I do have one question though, because people are going to want to know the names of like Ronan and Bo.
Yeah.
Like, is there significance to either of their names?
Yeah, so for me, yes, my dogs. Ronin is Japanese, and it means samurai without a master. And unbeknownst to me, it actually worked out perfect because, again, I don't know where I'm ever going.
Mm-hmm.
So he literally is like a samurai warrior without a master because I just...
You don't know what's happening.
Yeah, so
it's perfect.
That just worked out perfect. And Bo is spelled B-E-A-U. It's French for handsome. And I mean, obviously, he's like my...
That's
like,
self-evident,
yeah,
right? Self-
your dog, yeah.
Yeah, 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 pretty much. I mean,
we've
I looked in the mirror, and I was like, Bo.
Bo, yeah. We've had to endure those comments on social media. Deputy Feinberg.
Oh, no kidding.
Trust me. I know. It is. Women are wild.
Yeah.
It must be such a burden being you.
Yeah.
Oh, it's so tough. It's so tough.
Impossible.
Yeah. It's fun for my wife, though. Keeps her going.
Keeps her sharp.
Like, you see this? Do you see this comment? Don't you mess up.
I have alternatives.
Karen over here in Palm Harbor wants me.
Yeah, Karen in Palm Harbor.
Like, I still got it, babe. Yeah. I still got it.
You see this? Look at Gam Gam over here. She can take her teeth out. Anyway.
The only other thing I was thinking is Bo's first catch was pretty significant, wasn't it? Like, it was really quick.
It was. Oh,
because I'm like, I made a video from it.
Yeah, so that was actually a record.
Oh, was it?
Yeah.
So, oh, yeah. Was that the one that
it was like on Friday the 13th. Yes.
And it was complicated because we couldn't. It was a kid, right?
It was a juvenile. Yes.
Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah. That was our first shift together out of school, and I was literally driving into work, coming down off the Bayside. So it was probably like 7:02 when that call came out. So yeah, it was
with shift starting at 7.
Yes. Yeah. So it was the fastest first shift for a brand new dog, and the fastest time for catch in that sense.
Yeah, I remember it being like 15 minutes, like the whole track or something.
Yeah, it was a good one. Staffing and like shifts and stuff. So there's a day dog on, and a lot of people are surprised. Hey, there's only one dog on or a lower number of dogs during the day. It's like, well, yeah, because most people do dumb things at night. But then, like, what is like normal staffing for canine at night? Like, how many dogs are there?
Well, right now, like on my side, we'll have 6 dogs working at night.
Okay.
When we're fully staffed, we have 6. So
and a good mix. And you've got bomb dogs. And
yes. Yeah, yeah. Like we'll have 2 drug dogs that are working right now, Huckabee and Wyeth. They're both our drug dogs, so they're working at night. And then we'll have the bomb dogs. But yeah, right now we have 6. And like you said, then we have 1 on each side that will work a day shift schedule, just so we always have a dog on days.
Right. And when you say each side, what do you mean by that?
Yeah. Like my side and then Paul's side. So the unit itself is kind of split in half in that sense. So like you said, we have the sergeant, we have the 2 corporals, and then we have the handlers underneath each corporal.
So is it geographic or what is it? Like,
That's
how do you get on Justin's side?
Ooh, nobody wants to be on this side. honestly, at this point, so we kind of switched things up once I became corporal, and we honestly just went down the list, and we just kind of started by seniority, and we were like, one over here, one over here, one over here, one over here.
Just to even, yes. That makes sense.
Especially because we have a lot of new people in our unit right now, so it's a lot more difficult. Before, everybody was senior, everybody knew what they were doing, so now it's like you kind of want to make sure
you balance it out, and
enough veteran and enough new guys on each side, so.
Yeah, people, you know, I think you always see like canine running 1018 lights and sirens somewhere, because when you look at the county and you say, oh, well, we've only got, you know, 6 dogs working at a given time. That's a lot. You know, that's a lot going on. And God forbid you're in, you know, you guys might be gathered together training or doing something, because you're always doing
that. Oh, it never fails. It could be dead.
Something, you know,
and we're like, let's go do
you're
a training
in East Lake, and then bam, it happens at Fort DeSoto. And it's like, we'll be there tomorrow. Yeah. Like, you know.
It's either training or going to the bathroom.
Right.
if you're doing one of those things, a call is definitely coming out.
It's coming.
In more ways than one.
Hey-o! What else you guys got for Justin?
So for the Bloodhounds, I know they did all their initial training in the school in Pasco. For their ongoing training, are you a part of that? Or?
Yes.
Yeah.
So they actually still continue to go up to Pasco
on
a Tuesday. They'll go up to Pasco and train with them. But on a regular night, granted it's a Bloodhound, we treat it no different than we treat the regular dogs. They're still doing training tracks every single night, just like the rest of us are. But it's just a little different because obviously they can do both. They can do the scent article and they can do the freshest odor. Mm-hmm. So we'll do a mixture of both. But yeah, they're constantly training, just like the rest of us.
Yeah,
everybody
is.
And they are very scent discriminant.
Yes.
Pretty insane.
Yeah. It's wild. It's crazy how you'll set something up, or you'll have multiple people walking in the same direction, and they all just split off in different directions. And the dog, again, right? If you have that scent article, the dog scent discriminates, and you'll watch the dog track and just veer off to where the actual scent article was.
Because you can show a bloodhound a piece of clothes or whatever, and they'll go find that exact.
Yeah.
Which is insane. That's just crazy.
It's a really long time. Like, it can be like a full day
with
the bloodhounds, can't it?
Yeah. So our dogs actually just recently went to St. Augustine for a training class, and Weedy was out tracking, and at the end of the track, the guy was like, how long do you think this time lapse was? And Weedy was like, I don't know. The guy was like, 24 hours. So like a legitimate 24-hour track. Nice. And the dog tracked all the way to the end and got where he was supposed to be. Wow. So yeah, wow. It is absolutely incredible how long of a time lapse they can have.
I remember training, they said the dogs would work up to that.
Yeah, it's wild.
Awesome. That's awesome.
Our dogs are there.
They're there. Wow. Yeah. Tip of the spear, a bloodhound.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Well, actually, all the bloodhounds that were in that group out of Pasco, I think.
Oh, yeah.
The instructors were saying this is insane. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So we got the best bloodhounds around. You know, and I had the same thought when we talked to Mike, too, but the things you describe doing are actually pretty insane. Like,
mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
You've got, I mean, you're afraid of spiders and stuff, but we all are. But but you have this person that could have done this, whatever. Who knows what this person? You just know you got to find this person. Or you have somebody, you know who it is. You know they're a bad person. And they have run into the worst possible corner of Pinellas County they possibly can. And you guys just go in after them.
Yeah.
Knowing they can see you and you can't see them yet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Like that's the worst part of it, obviously. And you can see, you know, we know, unfortunately, how it can go sideways and what can happen. But why? Why do you do that every day? Like what? Like why?
Because we're crazy.
Yeah.
No, I mean, because if we don't, who will? Right? I mean, honestly, at the end of the day, and again, that's why I think it takes a special person, right? Everybody wants to do something, right? Like you want to be a professional athlete or you want to do something. There's just something that everybody wants to do, but just because you want to do something doesn't mean that you can, right? I'm a sole believer that there are certain things in life that are meant for certain people. Mm-hmm. Not everybody can do it. And this is for sure one of them for that exact reason, right? Like you're telling me that guy just killed somebody and he just took off running and I need you to go find him.
Right.
A known person be like, you're out of your mind. I'm not doing that. So for us, we put that out of our mind because I know that if I don't do it, who's going to do it?
Right.
And again, if I don't catch that person, they could possibly hurt somebody else. They could possibly kill somebody else. So you really have to kind of take that out of your head and not think about it until after. Because that's the thing. Like you said, there's some crazy, crazy stuff and there's some wild tracks. And it's like a movie, legitimately like a movie. Some of the stuff that we go through, the swamps, just some of the tracks that we have, these dogs are incredible. But when it's all said and done and then like the adrenaline dump happens and then you start to come back to reality and you're like, what the hell did I just do?
Mm-hmm.
But you think about it after and then usually we laugh about it because that's our way of coping with it. Because again, if we constantly thought about those things, we wouldn't do it. So I think that's really what it comes down to. It takes a certain person to be able to take that fear and put it in the back of their head and realize that you're serving a better purpose. In that sense, right? Like you're doing something more because you're meant to do it and not everybody can do it. And again, if I didn't do it, who would? So you really just kind of have to bury that and just realize.
But it's not really something you can teach either.
No. And again, that's why it's the same thing. Like a lot of people say that they want to do this and then they realize it's not for them, right? And there's nothing wrong with that. I mean, I think everybody, if they have a passion or if they have something that they think that they want to do, you should always try, right? You have to at least try because if you don't, what's the point? But there's also nothing wrong with trying something or thinking that this is something that you want to do and then realizing this isn't for
me. Right, sure.
Right? There's nothing wrong with that. I mean, I think at the end of the day, everybody has to experience failure at some point in their life because it teaches you who you really are. Like you have to fail at something in order to realize how you're going to recover from that. Are you going to bounce back? Are you going to be stronger? Or are you going to do something else that now you figured out like, okay, this wasn't for me, but now I'm really good at this. So now I find my niche.
But there doesn't seem to be a whole lot of folks that make it through canine tryouts and through canine school and then come in and are like, yeah, this isn't for me. So you guys do whatever it is you do a good job of
vetting.
Yeah. I mean, but you know, cause it's like, well, you have plenty of people that they have the physicality, they have whatever, but then you have to have that piece of it. Like I think something, and we were talking about this earlier, like there's definitely this, Not a stigma in the full sense, but you know, you guys are hard on each other. You joke around, cut up, you know, kind of speaking to being one of the guys. I mean, but that's across the board, you know, law enforcement, military, all that stuff. Is that part of that? Is that, you know, are you kind of poking people and needling them just to see if you can break them? Like, is it like a hazing thing? Yeah. Like, what is that part of it?
Not so much hazing, but it's for sure. Like you said, you have to have thick skin. And I think we know that and we kind of do that to each other because of it. Because, again, you have to be bipolar because you can have an amazing track and an amazing catch and then all of a sudden you don't. and everybody's talking about you, mm-hmm. right? Like everybody's like, oh, that dog stinks, or this guy, this, like you got to kind of like be able to let that go. Mm-hmm. So us as a group, I think we're the hardest on each other because we're building each other up in that sense, almost preparing ourselves for that, realizing that somebody's always gonna have something to say. Somebody's not gonna like what you did, or somebody's right. gonna think that you could have did more. So we do that as a unit where I think we do a really good job of taking care of each other and building up each other so that we're all on the same platform in that sense. And nobody's kind of sitting below. Like I'm only as good as the other handler, right? Like our unit is only as good as the other handler. So mm-hmm. I need to make sure that Jason is as good as me and my dog, because again, he has a job to do just like I have a job to do. Right. So we're definitely very hard on each other, but that motivates each other because mm-hmm. that's who we are. But going back to like vetting people, mm-hmm. the nice thing for us is the people that want canine definitely make it known and they train with us. So we can see that they're not afraid of dogs, but we also take them on live calls with us. So that's huge for us. So like when we're actually out tracking, if I can have a potential candidate behind me and helping me, they get to see it for themselves. Mm-hmm. So, and it's the same thing. Like I tell people all the time, listen, we take people. If it's not you, please just tell me. Like, I don't want you to feel like you have to go with me. If that's not you, if right. you don't want to jump fences, if you don't want to go through the swamp, if you don't want to chase this bad guy, I'm okay with that. Just be honest with me.
Right.
And then the people that do, they'll come with you and then like they're hooked.
Right.
Like those guys that want canine.
So you can kind of see it that way.
Because backup is just as fun, honestly. Like, and that's why for me, even though I have a newer dog, and being in the corporal role, I have to kind of take a back seat and let the new guys work. So I'm running around a lot more now than I was. And it's just still so much more exciting. Like when I'm out with Weedy and Weedy catches somebody, we're both screaming like girls.
Right.
Like it's just, it's the same thing. Like it's just so exciting. So being able to be there and see that happen, mm-hmm. the people in patrol get to experience that as well. And it also, and at that point it shows them like, oh yeah, that's what I want. 100% I want that. Or they're like, yeah, that's not for me. Because we've had it. We've had people that have said that they want canine. And then once they start to get more involved, then they're just like,
yeah, not so much.
This is not for me. Which, again, it's fine.
Right. Better to figure it out then.
Yeah.
For sure. What's next for you? I mean, obviously, Bo is pretty new. So he's got, got some years left. But what's something else you want to do?
It just depends. Yeah. I mean, so I took the sergeant's test. Mm. So I'm hoping that happens. Mm-hmm. I might have to Nancy Kerrigan, Mike, at some point.
Well, his knees are probably already bad enough. Like, I don't know.
Wait till the oak comes out of the kennels and just be like, ah, gotcha. And then run real fast because Mike will beat me up. So it's like,
I was going to say, there's a handful of people that I would not.
I wouldn't, I know.
Not want to mess with. That's hilarious.
Yeah, Mike, I promise I won't do that.
So Sergeant at some point, that would be nice.
I hope so. Yeah.
Are there any areas of the agency that you have an interest in?
I really enjoy mentoring and teaching in general. Mm-hmm. So it's not so much that I have something that I have to be in canine, right? Like I love this is my passion. And again, it's one of those things where you find something that you love to do for work. It's really not work, right? Like mm-hmm. I get to go to work every single day and I love what I do. So it doesn't feel like it's a job, but I also love helping other people. So whether my path is to stay in canine for the rest of my career or my path is to go somewhere else, I really enjoy helping other people and mentoring them. So it's just something that I just want to do in general. Mm-hmm. I really feel like the same thing. It takes a certain type of person to be able to put on that role and be able to help teach people and build them up and make them a better deputy and a better person. So,
So when you're not at work being passionate about canine, what does Justin like to do in his spare time?
Ooh, so much.
You're like an outdoorsy guy.
I do. I love being outside. The sun.
As long as there aren't spiders and snakes.
As long as there's no spiders. Oh, yeah. It's
winter sports.
Oh, I do. I love winter. I'm actually flying out on Wednesday. We're going to Keystone, Colorado. Yeah. Yeah.
How many different parts of your body are you going to injure this time?
Oh, not. Because I really messed myself up last time.
Injured your shoulder. And then while you were telling somebody how you injured your shoulder, I fell down a flight of stairs.
Yes. Yes. Oh, my God. So.
No. I told you. He falls a lot.
I do.
Good Lord.
So. We did a guys trip a couple weeks ago. It was me, Nick Forgione, John Dobson, and Sean Liver. Those are the guys I actually got hired with too. Like those are my best friends. Mm-hmm. We grew up together in this agency. Like we all had kids at the same time. Mm-hmm. So like that's my family right there. So we did a guys trip and we went to Breckenridge and we're going up the lift and I see that there's like this little curvy like little racetrack path that's like almost like a mini half pipe. And of course we're out there by ourselves, so you're guys, you're like, oh, I gotta do that. Oh yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. My buddy's like, let's just go do it now. I'm like, sure. So we start going And I'm going down, and I end up coming up the side of the little half pipe area, and I just completely eat it. I just smacked right into the ground. My shoulder got so messed up. Like, I could barely even lift my shoulder up at that point. So I was done. And it happens every time because I'm like, I don't get to go as often as I want to. Like, obviously, if I lived out there, you'd go all the time. But now it's like you get to go once, twice a year. And when you're out there, you're like, oh, I'm going to do everything and anything.
Right.
And you just don't realize I'm old. Like, I just need to stop.
Right.
So we go back to the room. I try to get dressed because at that point I can barely even dress myself. The guys are helping me put my clothes on because I can't even put my arm up. And we go to walk to get dinner. So now I'm on the phone FaceTiming my wife and my kids, telling them what happened. And as I'm saying, I think I need an x-ray. Like, as soon as x-ray comes out of my mouth, my feet come up in the air and I completely fall and slide down concrete stairs and just eat it. And now I'm just laying on the sidewalk in the middle of Breckenridge, like, ugh.
Did you hold on to the phone the whole time?
No, so I held on to the phone, and then my buddy walks over and picks up the phone and continues to FaceTime my wife while he's laughing at me.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Holy cow.
Oh, dang.
So skiing and stuff, I don't know. Yeah. I just...
Yeah, so yeah, I love that aspect, but living here, it's the water. I mean, we're out on the boat as much as we can. If I can be outside and be in the sun and just... Mm-hmm. Enjoy myself.
That's
absolutely
the spot.
Oh yeah, 100%. It's all about being outside. Yeah,
and not hurting yourself skiing.
I mean, I try not to
fall down the stairs.
Yeah, it just happens. Like I said, I fall a lot.
Yeah. So we like to make sure we give everybody an opportunity that comes on to, you know, hey, what's that one thing that you think the public needs to know or needs to understand about your job, your specific role, law enforcement in general? Is there anything that comes to mind? This is your time for your PSA.
Yeah, there's a couple of things.
Justin Raw right here.
Yeah, ooh, yeah. One, for like canine related, mm-hmm. Like I said, stay inside
your house.
Just stay in your house. I mean, again, it's absolutely amazing that there can be cruisers all over the place, lights all over the place, the helicopter's up, the dog's up, and everybody comes outside and be like, should I be concerned? Yes. Like, get inside. Like, no, we're not just taking the dog for a walk.
Right.
So
there's something happening,
yeah,
clearly.
Like, yeah. One, and please, if you see something, say something.
Right.
Like, if you're inside your house and the guy runs through your backyard, absolutely. Come running out and be like, hey, he just ran through my backyard.
Right, right, right.
All day long. I love that. But if you just come walking up to me and you're like, should I be concerned? Is everything okay? Is anything going on? You're like,
yeah.
Yeah, there's a serial killer out. Please get inside. Like,
right. Not only for that reason, but because they could mess up the track.
Oh, they do, for sure. Yeah, yeah. Yeah. It happens a lot because then people are just out. And then my dog's focused on that person.
Right.
Because then they're yelling at me like, what's going on? And then my dog looks over like, ooh, is that the guy I'm supposed to get? And it's like, no, back over here. So, yeah, it does. It messes up.
Stay inside, mind your business.
Yeah, yeah. It messes up things a lot. Mm-hmm. But I think the biggest thing for the public, and me and Laura talked about this before, I think it's really for people to understand that at the end of the day, we're still human beings, mm-hmm. right? And I think that's the hardest thing because our job is very difficult, and I'm not making excuses for it. Like, I signed up for this 100%.
Sure.
But we go through a lot, and we see a lot. And that's not normal, right? Like, a normal human being should not see the things that we see on a daily basis. Mm-hmm. And that's the thing. Like, we see people at their worst every single day, and we're there to help them. But the trauma that we see, the violence that we see, everything that we go through, it 100% takes a toll on you. Mm-hmm. That's impossible. Like,
sure.
You can't tell me that you do this job and you see that stuff every day and it doesn't affect you.
Mm-hmm.
It does. And I think that's very hard for people in law enforcement to be able to cope with and deal with as well, right? Because we're told you have to be A-type personality, you have to be macho, you have to be able to kind of like, you know, deal with it. And we do, we bury it. And we all know when you bury stuff, it only makes things worse, right?
Sure.
It just builds up and builds up and builds up, and eventually people explode. So it's not so much that I'm making excuses. It's just kind of reminding the public just to remember at the end of the day, we're human beings as well. And seeing all that trauma affects people. And then you put on our personal lives, just mm-hmm. like everybody else has, right?
Sure.
Your marriages, your kids, everything that's going on. It's a lot to deal with. I mean, mental health is a huge thing in general. I mean,
right.
Whether you're a law enforcement or whether you're
no matter what.
A human being, I mean, it's huge. And mm-hmm. I think it's a good thing that we're really finally starting to understand now.
Mm-hmm.
Because back then, I mean, nobody cared. You were like...
Yeah, whatever.
Yeah, whatever, mental health. Yeah. Suck it up, buttercup.
Right.
Like, that's it.
Right.
And I think now it's coming to the light that it's serious. And I think people need to really pay attention to that more and really do what they need to do to help themselves. But I think the public needs to kind of remember that at sometimes too. Like, we're also working through a lot as well. We're trying to do a lot. And
yeah, like everything else.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's interesting that you say that and bring that up, though, because also, you know, just a few minutes ago, we were talking about how tough you are on each other and whatever, how that can seem very, like, unforgiving. But
yeah.
But deep inside there,
oh, yeah.
There's a thoughtful guy.
Oh, yeah, 100%.
And that's just the culture of it. That's how it is.
And that's a nice thing, too, about being in a unit that I'm in, because we are so close that we're also each other's therapists mm-hmm. at the end of the day, mm-hmm. where it's, I mean, you'll see people all the time, like, oh, if you need help, if you need to talk, come talk to me. But like, oh, I don't know you, and I'm not going to talk to you. Like,
right.
Nobody's going to talk to somebody that they don't know
right.
unless you go to a professional. So
right.
being in a unit that I'm in, because we're so close, because we go through so much together and we have so many experiences, mm-hmm. it's a lot easier for us to really be like, hey, come here, just I need to talk for a second. And we're able to let things out a lot easier and be able to talk to each other. So we're very blessed in that sense.
I think
it makes things a lot easier for us.
Yeah, I mean, that's solid for anybody in any yeah. profession, I think, you know, yeah. stay close to your peers.
Yeah.
Well, Corporal Justin Feinberg, everybody, thank you so much for coming on and letting us interrogate you for a minute. We have all kinds of opportunities for folks to give us feedback on this podcast. And we have an Instagram specific to the podcast. It's 56 podcast, all spelled out on Instagram. But if you want to send us an email, you can do that. And Laura, where might they send that email?
They can send it to lets56@pcsonet.com. That's lets56@pcsonet.com.
You guys were really locking eyes there for that. I'm like, what?
I was just so focused.
This
I'm
is
like,
an intense moment for me when I get to do this. Yeah.
That was intense.
It was like she was on the Wheel of Fortune. Just
well, as always, thanks everybody for listening, and we'll talk to you next time.